Hey, hey, hey.
Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. Today I have with me your other hostess, Hanako.
Hello.
Your other hostess, Stephanie.
Hey there.
And your other host, Eric.
Hello.
Hi. And today we're talking about Game of Thrones.
Woo!
That is right. We got yelled at on Twitter by Felicia. And she wanted us to talk about Game of Thrones again because she really enjoyed our episode and that was pretty awesome. So, hi Felicia, thank you for yelling at us. We had planned to do that. We hope you enjoy it. I also like to give a shout out to a few other listeners. I've been slacking on that. So, Mike, who is also Jarek, probably. I'm not sure why I said it the way I did the first one on Twitter. Charles Hal 2814. He is always either tweeting us or what on Facebook or calling us by voicemail. Carpe Carne, who also listens to Doctor Who MHC, also says a bit about Sci-Fi Party Line. Nikki Patton, Mark Cockrum, Roddy Cat, Blue Girl 718, Alex, Dwayne Kuntz on Facebook, Dan Better, and Alex, who hits us on Facebook, Twitter, and our website, which is scifipartyline.com. So, we really thank you guys for giving us feedback throughout the years, throughout the months, and we just want to let you know you were appreciated. Now to the show. Now to the Game of Thrones. Okay, so last time it was Hanako and Carl. And so what we did not get was Eric and Stephanie's kind of initial response to the first episode. So we're kind of going to get that from them. And, you know, if it bleeds over into the second episode, it really doesn't matter because it's just two episodes and we kind of just want to get the thoughts on everything. And I think I want Stephanie to kind of open up with some thoughts on how she's feeling about this season.
Well, I have positive feelings about this. nothing really terrible to say. It's still exciting. I can't believe it's still exciting in its seventh season, but it really is. It's a pretty gripping story. I'm happy to see Arya moving on, and she's got this super badass quality now where she can pretend to be anyone, which I love. I love that so much, and I love that she's going to go down her list. It's pretty great. Samwell, really happy to see he's playing a bigger role. And I've read online that there's a theory that he's the narrator of the entire books as the maester.
So, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I read that too.
Yeah, so I was unsure. I was on the fence about that theory until the second episodes. But I don't want to get into that right now. But I'm just happy. I don't know, I'm just happy to see him. I'm glad that everything's okay, that he wasn't hunted down for stealing, you know, the sword. That's pretty much it for now. I want to hear everybody else's thoughts. I'm just happy. I'm really happy. And, you know, I'm happy that Danny's still in it, because what a anticlimactic, like, build-up otherwise. Cersei, gosh, can't wait to see what happens to her. Can't be good.
She's gonna die!
Can't be good! But you know she's gonna have a wonderful death! And it might happen this season! Anyway, yeah, that's it. Eric?
Hello. Yes.
he is watching it in the background.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, I almost completely forgot about the first episode, other than I remember I liked it. For being a first episode, I felt it was pretty good because I haven't done a rewatch of the entire series in forever. And I just remember vague memories of season one's not always being the most exciting thing. Because I just had this memory of some episode ones just being like, oh, okay, I guess it's back, but we have a long way to go for things to build up again. Yada, yada. But no, already off to a good start just with this first episode. And of course, the opening was good. I mean, it kind of got me because for some reason I thought Walder Frey was reincarnated or something for a second. I thought I misremembered what happened last year. So, I mean, you know, that worked. That was effective. Like I said, it worked and it was good. But I guess I have more thoughts once we start weaving in the second episode.
Okay. Hanako. So let's try to recap. We don't have to do a full recap, but like, what? How did the first, the beginning of this second episode start? What do we start with?
Dragonstone.
And like, what was the top? What was?
That was basically the scene where Daenerys and her council, her small council, they were reviewing things in Dragonstone about her potential new allies, and Varys was there. So this is the first time that Daenerys and Varys have actually met. And, you know, she kind of took Varys to task, basically because, you know, if you don't remember from the first season, Varys was the one who had all the spies around and was getting, he was the person that Jorah was reporting to as far as Daenerys' movements when you know, Jorah was supposed to be spying on Dany for King Robert.
You know, I forgot about that. I forgot that was a whole thing, and I forgot who
Sad. Jorah.
Yeah, yeah, I did. It was so long ago.
That's why she banished Jorah. Initially, because she found out about it.
So I like how she keeps Varys now, and all she does is like sternly talks to him. But Jorah, you know what I'm saying? Dude had to get dragon scale and all this other type of stuff. But she, Varys, she's just like, yeah, I'll burn you, and then that's it.
Yeah, but I think the thing is because her betrayal by Jorah in her eyes. She's been traveling with Jorah for years. He had so much time when he could have come clean and said, okay, look, I know that I'm your right-hand person right now, but when things started, this is what happened. This is how I found you in the first place, blah, 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 blah. If he had said all of that and admitted it, I think she would have been more respectful of it because she would have... Daenerys seems to be the type of person she... values truth and honesty, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons why she wasn't as harsh with Varys, because when she kind of got onto Varys, Varys didn't back down. He was like, oh yeah, okay, well let me tell you this. He was like, I'm not faithful to any king. I'm not loyal to any queen. I do what I do for the people. That's always been my agenda. That will always be my agenda. If you don't agree with that, kill me now. And he basically laid it out for her like that. And I think she respected that. You know, the fact that even though his intentions may not have started off well in regards to her, where he is now and what he's doing to help her conquer, you know, the Seven Kingdoms, she sees it's from an honest place. It's not, you know, he's not like, say, Littlefinger, where Littlefinger's always trying to up his own agenda. You know, Varys from the beginning, even when Ned Stark was sitting in, you know, in the dungeon, you know, Ned Stark asked him, he said, who do you serve, Varys? He said, the people. It's always been the people. you know, Varys is one of those characters who has stayed true to who he is from the beginning.
What are you saying,
Stephanie? So, and I think...
I think that it's a case of miscalculation on Jorah's part. So, you know, there's been this huge evolution of Dany's character over the several seasons. And same with him. I mean, we see that he falls in love with her. So, I mean, that's holding him back because he loves her and knows that if he does tell her, then that's definitely the end of any relationship they could have. And then, in addition to that, she's a very opportunistic person. So she needs him more than he needs her at the beginning. And then there is this switch where he needs her more than she needs him. And he just miscalculated that balance where it would have been a better time to tell her. Because, I mean, on the one hand, she definitely looked heartbroken when she banished him. And then you could tell that she cared about him, you know, when he saved her or whatever later on. But she didn't have a choice at that point. I mean, she had to stick to her word because she's definitely risen to the point where, you know, she's calling all the shots. And if she made this exception, then that would be completely detrimental to anything that she's built herself up to be. So, I don't know. I feel for him. I feel like he just miscalculated the fact that her power means more to her than anything. And
well, the thing is, he didn't voluntarily tell her. Remember, he was outed, basically.
Right. Like, he definitely wouldn't have told her, I don't think, not until very later on, maybe on his deathbed or something. But I think that it wasn't like, I don't know, part of it I think was out of fear of losing her. And part of it was a little bit of miscalculation. Like, he probably thought he was more important to her than he actually is.
This is tough, listening to all this, just because, to sidestep for a second, about a year and a half ago, someone like introduced me to the concept of the Watsonian and the Doyleist perspective on things, which I already really knew about. I just didn't know those labels until someone introduced them to me about a year and a half ago. And with that in mind, especially when I watch Game of Thrones these days, these late seasons, I can't help but think about those types of things. So like the scenes you were just talking about, in a Watsonian way in universe, as I was watching them, I was completely on the other side, just feeling like those scenes just had to be in there to sew things up. Do you know what I mean? Because they're teaming
up.
Hey,
wait, Eric, I need you to explain your terms. I think we can kind of deduce what they mean, but so, go ahead and explain them.
Watsonian is like when you're like talking about the characters in the universe, like as you guys just were, like what are the motivations of Dany and Jorah and Varys, etc. You know, like looking at how they've interacted thus far and what they're trying, like what their goals are. But the Doyleist is like, what are the makers or the author or the writer, the producers, what are they trying to do or what are they trying to accomplish? And especially in these later seasons, well, last season especially, and now this season, I can't help but look at it more from the producer's point of view. And all I saw during that scene was, okay, we got Varys now, and we're teaming him up with Daenerys. Well, this is not going to make sense, because technically she should want to kill him. So we have to come up with like a really eloquent speech. Like, it's almost like a retcon in a way. Not a retcon, but like a Band-Aid. To explain how these like unlikely bedfellows can get together. And then someone's like, okay, I got it. He's going to talk about this and how everything. And it makes sense in the universe. I mean, Varys' reasoning, it's not like it comes out of left field. But all I felt was, this is a scene to patch up this relationship so that we may continue with what we really want to do in the story. And
so you felt it was just like, not really a true thing that should have happened in real life.
No. I'm not saying it's not logical. It doesn't make sense. It does make sense. But I just feel like its purpose, though, was because they wanted to build that bridge so that they can carry on with more storytelling down the road. So they came up with this reason, which I'm not saying it doesn't make sense.
But was it boring to you? Was it that it was so convenient?
It wasn't boring, but it felt like it felt required. Like here's the scene where we explain why they can get along. And it wasn't a bad scene or anything like that. I'm just saying my mind is just focused on that part.
Yeah, I get it, but then like when you bring up I know how like when Stephanie and Hanako was like, well, you know, it was different with Jorah. He needed to go through the banishment and all this other stuff, and then Varys gets his pass. So, I mean, and then she's a different person now than she was.
Well, the other thing, what I think about that, like what it comes to mind, is that Daenerys is a bit different in the books than she is in the TV. In the books, she has more, let's say, not positive qualities in general as a character.
Really?
And yeah, and in the television series, she's got more of the better qualities, and her like bad qualities are softened or taken away. So it makes her, obviously they're portraying her as a much more like not heroic, but just, I don't know, like better put together character. I mean like all her motivations and things like that.
Well, then what? Then in the books, how does she differ from Cersei?
She's a lot more. She's more like Cersei in a way in the books, and less like Cersei in the television show.
Right. That's what I see.
Yeah, and because in the series, she seems portrayed as much more noble, like having much more noble goals and, you know, and aspirations. Whereas she seems like a not Joffrey, but like how Joffrey was younger and more immature and impulsive. And Dany's character is younger in the book. And so she's a little bit more Joffrey-like. Not that bad, but I'm just saying like a little bit more that direction. But I'm not saying they should do that in the show. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that when we have the Daenerys scenes, that's in the back of my head too. Mm. How they made her this different person. I'm not saying they shouldn't have done that. It's just, my mind won't let me forget it, is all I'm saying.
So, guys, what did y'all think about the appearance of the Red Witch, and what do we think she's up to at this point?
Honestly, I mean, I don't know. I think her character is, I don't know. I think at this point she's trying to, I guess, maybe right some wrongs that she did with Stannis' rule. You know, she was so focused on helping him, ascend to be king. And she was willing to do all this other stuff and, you know, in the name of this Lord of Light. And I think she sees that the cruel way that she was doing things, which I don't think she was doing them to be cruel, but it ended up being that way. The human sacrifices, Stannis's daughter being sacrificed, her blood spells that I guess if you believe it ultimately led to Joffrey and Rob and Renly's deaths. You know, she did all of that. She sacrificed all those people, and she still didn't get the outcome that she was so-called shown in the fire. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell whether or not she's just being opportunistic and just going with whoever she thinks is going to win, or if she actually has a bit of a change of heart. Right now, I'm not sure what I think about her. But she's about to have some interesting, next week I think is going to be really interesting for her if she's still in Dragonstone when Jon Snow and Ser Davos show up.
How did she, the last thing I remember she was hanging out with Jon Snow. How did she leave? I can't remember.
She was actually banished. Jon Snow banished her after Ser Davos told him what she did in order to try to secure Stannis' win. Basically, Davos was like, yeah, you allowed them to, you told him to sacrifice his daughter, and that's what he did. And Davos was basically like, if I ever see you again, I will kill you.
Okay, I remember now. Yeah. So what I'm thinking is that she just goes from place to place telling people that they are the prophecy and try to get them to believe her and do some stuff. Because I feel like she kicked that same game to everybody she encounters. And it's like, what is she up to? What is she even doing? I don't trust
her. Because when she's talking about the prophecy or whatever, she's using the masculine, you know, gender or whatever. And so then when they speak up and say, actually, the ancient language doesn't specify, you know, gender or whatever, then she's like, I don't know. To me, she just seems like not quite a sycophant, but somebody who's just... She seems like a less strategic Littlefinger.
Wow. I have a different take on her at this point.
Really?
Okay. Now we all know what she's done so far in the past and getting things wrong, and we get all that. But fast forward to now, and in this episode, I saw her as perhaps the first character, I can think of up to this point, who at this point now, she is closely relating to, I think, us the viewers, meaning that, or not all of us, but many of us, meaning she seems the character, the only one I can think of so far, who might possibly see the big picture here, that many of us fans have been seeing since season 2 or so. Things that are just finally coming to light now in this episode. She seems to be the first character who can kind of step back and see the whole big picture. And I don't know if she's on the right track finally after making her mistakes, but that's what I saw in this scene, and that's what I liked about this scene, because it seems like she's the first one who gets it. Like, and there's other characters who allude to it in this episode too, like details of getting it, but she seems like she has the best grasp on the big picture.
So if she didn't realize that the prophecy was could talk about a male or female, what makes you think that she even had Daenerys in mind for anything?
That was on purpose though.
Her wording was very specific. I think because when we talked last week, I made mention that while I think either John or Danny would be good on the throne, ultimately, if I have to choose between one or the other, my choice is John. And you notice when she said something about the prince, you know, or princess, and Daenerys says, so you think that it's me. She did not say, yes, I think it's you. She said, I believe you have a role to play.
Right. You're right.
She was very specific not to say, I believe you are the chosen one. I think she's learned from that mistake, but also, I don't know if this is what Eric was alluding to or not, but she has a part to play. She may be part of the big picture, but I don't think the more I've watched the last couple of seasons, I don't think Daenerys is endgame. But that's just my personal opinion. I don't think she's the end game.
She's a charlatan to me. Like, that's the role she plays. She's
the Red Queen.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Daenerys was a charlatan. I thought that at first too.
Yeah, I was getting confused. I was like, wait, what?
Until she finished her sentence.
Sorry, yeah. Stephanie. Sorry.
I mean, she's basically telling everybody what they want to hear, and she's being super vague about her answers, and that's what a charlatan does.
I don't see her as a charlatan.
I don't either.
She's been imperfect in her predictions, but she's not. I don't think she's really trying to dupe people.
Well, why is she there? Like, how does she know or hear that Daenerys was going to her home? And why is she there? How does she just randomly appear there? Was she summoned? Did she just like,
anyone in this universe, the main players in the show could deduce that. Because everyone in Westeros has heard that Daenerys is coming. It only makes sense that she would probably stop at Dragonstone.
Right, so she doesn't.
So that's simple. So I mean, anyone
could. Because she doesn't have any. She's just randomly going through these people like any other person, any other character.
I don't know.
But no, I
why
think,
you think that. I don't know why you think that.
You know what? I feel like
whatever her motivation.
Her motivations are similar to Varys in a way, but coming at it from a different angle. But
I don't know. I don't think so anymore. And I would have said if
why do you say that?
Before last season, episode 2, I would have thought that. I would have thought, okay, she's only out for self. She's just trying to stick with and, you know, see who's going to be on the winning side. But you have to think about it. After Stannis lost, after Stannis's forces were defeated and he fell as her king, when she realized everything that she was seeing was wrong, she was broken. You guys have to remember that she was broken. She stopped believing in herself. She stopped believing in her power. Davos was the one who got her to believe again by pep talking her, whatever it was that he gave to her to make her believe that she could bring Jon Snow back from the dead. I don't care what kind of charlatan, what kind of fake person you are. Once you have that kind of power, once you are shown that kind of power, even for someone who supposedly was devout, supposedly was a dedicated, you know, priestess to the Lord of Light, the fact that she had no belief at that point and she was able to bring this man back from the dead, I think that changes the way you think about things and it may change your perspective. I don't think she has any ulterior motives in this point, except for the fact that she's trying to play her role, maybe the way that the Lord of Light is telling her, but she can't go in all, you know, arrogant the way she was before, because she was very arrogant up till that point. Now she's been a little more humble, especially since Jon Snow came back when Davos went to speak to her and he said, well, what are you going to do now? She said, I'm here to do whatever Jon Snow commands, you know, and I think she really truly believes it about him, that whatever is about to happen, whatever is about to take place in this war or in the, you know, ruling the Seven Kingdoms, I think that she truly feels like he is the major player in this, and that, like she said, Daenerys has a role to play. I don't know how she's going to play that, because I don't think that, I think if she had to choose where her loyalties lied, I think that she would go with Jon Snow.
So to me, Hanako, there's like, for all of everything to play out, she's not necessary anymore. Like, she, to me, for all of everything to happen, we don't need the Red Witch. So her showing up to me is like, why is she even there?
What, because she again, she's for us, I the viewer, and she's showing that she kind of, I told you, it. She's the first one who gets it.
Well,
and,
she gets.
I agree with most of what Hanako said just now. And also that whole bit about the whole nomenclature, about the gender or whatever, the prophecy, that is completely intentional. I mean, for them to throw that in. Because again, going back to like season one or two, many people have wondered since that far back, you know, fast forward to the end, is it going to be John or Danny? That's been like the debate forever. And they don't want to make, I mean, that's what they have to constantly do with this show. The closer we get to the end is try to steer us from the truth or steer us from figuring it out too quick. And they do things like this to just further try to throw us off the trail and still leave it up to debate. Oh, you know, is it Danny? Is it John? That's exactly why they put that dialogue in. But then also we still don't know anyway, because George R. R. Martin, but it's not even really him anymore, because
it's gonna be Sansa.
No, I'm saying
it's
saying it was originally his story, but at this point I think the producers,
it's Benioff and Weiss.
Yes, I think they're kind of doing their thing, and I wouldn't be surprised if their ending is perhaps very different, or
Littlefinger.
very different from the ending we eventually get in the books. And, you know, so with the producers, what are they going to decide to do? Because, you know, this story, the original story, borrows a lot from a lot of other popular fiction. And are they going to do the thing like they did in Star Wars and Harry Potter, where the prophecy points towards Anakin or it points towards Harry, but in the very end, it ends up, oh, you think it's going to be Luke, but that's like a red herring because it ends up being Anakin again. Or in the case of Harry, it's actually Neville
who saves. It's going to be Grey Worm. Grey Worm. It's going to be Grey Worm. I can't even say Grey that. Worm.
No, but what I'm saying is it could be Danny, it could be John, like everyone thinks, or it could be Tyrion. Their offspring, or something else like that. But we don't know, you know. Could but. Be.
I want to go back to something else as far as Melisandre goes. Kat, I know you say that you feel like her role at this point is not necessary, but you also have to look at the fact, I don't think it's coincidence that she's showing up again now, because we're also dealing with another Red Priest that we have only seen like maybe twice or three times through the whole season. And we're seeing more of him now, and it's the, I cannot think of the character's name, but it's the one that's traveling with the Hound and Beric Dondarrion. He's brought Beric back from the dead, seven times now? And it's like, we only saw him maybe once in season, I think it was two or three, and then we saw him again once in some other season, but now we've seen, you know, we've seen a lot of him as, you know, especially in that first episode. And you've got to think, if they're putting the Hound with that group and they're, you know, they're kind of making that a thing and they're all headed towards the same destination, that can't be a coincidence that we have two active prophets of the Lord of Light.
Yes, and I'm glad that Hanako reminded us all of that other character, because again, I think the importance of Melisandre and him, I mean, Kat, to say that they're not important or that they're probably not.
I forgot about him. It makes sense now when she brought him.
But as it pertains to both of them, though, it would be like saying Lord of the Rings doesn't need a Gandalf and a Sauron, because those two are like the only real magic.
I don't think
magic.
She's as powerful as Gandalf.
I'm not saying she is literally Gandalf. I'm saying, though, those two represent the biggest magic users we've seen in this entire series. So in that respect, she is the Gandalf, in that no one else has done any more magic than she.
I don't know. Arya's doing a pretty good job of her magic.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good one.
That is her magic. Changing your face and bringing back a dead person, I think, are two different things.
Yeah, totally different things.
Well, she looked really, the Red Witch lady, Melisandre, looked really surprised when Jon Snow came back to life.
Like, yeah, because again, like I said, she had lost all her faith.
Right.
She thought that, you know, she didn't have the faith, and when it was there.
And she was, I don't know, if I had the ability to bring people back to life, I would not be, and this wasn't even her first time to do that.
She didn't know that any of that was ever going to work. I mean,
but she, it wasn't the first time she'd done that. And so then, the fact that she looked super surprised that he came back, I don't know. If I were magic and had done that before, I would not look that surprised. I feel like she's just, I don't know. I'm with Kat, where there's like really no use for her anymore.
No use. All right. Well, you guys can put that on the record. I do not sign off on that.
Okay.
Like, if you took out Arya at this point, that's a pretty useful character. I wouldn't want her to go. But if you took out Melisandre right now, like, the only thing she has going for her is that, why the hell is she, like...
Not only that, but she can still bring, like, things together. She can still broker things that no one else can. And I'm not talking about magic, I'm just talking about,
But then, if not magic, then how is she different from Varys in that? I mean, because they met at the same time, they seem like two sides of the same, one side.
Yeah, they are like foils to each other, but just like Jon and Daenerys, Varys and Melisandre, their characters represent the two opposite sides of the known world, the West and the East, and that's what it's all about. That's why we have these foil characters, because it's bringing together the whole Game of Thrones world.
So the thing that interests me about her is that she's actually a saggy old lady. We haven't explored this. Why is she, if her magic was so amazing, why does she look like that in real life? Why does she look like that in the mirror? Is that the toll that her magic takes on her? Or is that some kind of spell that someone casts on her? And she's like,
like the portrait of Dorian Gray or something.
Well, I don't know if she's cursed, right? So
could be.
Cursed by someone. That's why she
would spend this much time on her, honestly.
Wow. No, but I think that's interesting, though, too, because it works in the visual of, is she this cursed person who puts on this facade? But then it also works as representing the metaphor of who she is anyway. So, you know, I don't know.
But they haven't explored that, right? So I'm kind of bored, and it's not serving any purpose for me right now. Yeah, that part.
If I go with that reckoning, I could just kill 12 characters right now. You know, right now, no use. But I'm assuming things are going to happen in the remaining episodes. I'm assuming it's not just going to be the John and Danny show for 4 episodes.
It's definitely not going to be just the John and Danny show after the end of this episode.
Okay, so what comes next? What happened after that? Because I didn't think we were going to stay on that for long, but we did. What happened next? You're watching it, Eric. What happened?
Oh gosh, I've gone so far past that now.
Rewind.
I mean, pick your character whose story you want to follow. I mean, in this episode, whether it's Arya.
Somebody pick.
Can we talk about Grey Worm and Missandei?
Oh, I closed my eyes on that whole thing.
That happened. Why?
I didn't want to see that shit.
That was one of the best scenes.
That's one of the. Okay, look. For a show that has a wide array of coupling scenes. And I mean copulating scenes. That was probably the most tender and sweetest one that's
existed. That was a beautiful scene.
And Kat chooses that one to skip of all that we've seen between so many characters. She chooses to skip the most tender.
I usually skip them all. Honestly, I don't really like watching sex scenes.
But it wasn't even a sex scene. Just a sex scene, though.
Yeah, I don't like to watch that. I think they should fade away early. If I want to watch people have sex, I'll watch porn.
If you don't want to watch this scene that we're talking about. But to me, obviously, it can't have the same significance. But to me, it's in the vein of like the first Uhura Kirk kiss. To me, this particular love scene or whatever you want to call it is somewhere in that department.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because in a show that is known for gratuitous and sometimes unnecessary graphic sex, the simpleness of this scene and the intimacy of this scene, it's like this is about two characters who really, truly care for each other. And it wasn't overshadowed by all, you know, yes, we had a little bit of nudity, but it wasn't done with any crudeness. It wasn't done with any, you know, it wasn't like a Khal Drogo and Daenerys for the first time scene or, you know, the Lannisters together. It was something that in a show that's really, really about a lot of violence and, you know, negativity, it was a very, very, it was just very different.
Kat, when have you ever seen in any like mainstream show or movie or, you know, whatever, where have you ever seen like a love scene or romantic, whatever kind of scene that just was, with a character who's essentially a eunuch or a genderless person?
Did they show that?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then it wasn't really different than anything else.
So they have to actually show Captain Kirk penetrate Uhura for it to count? Or what are you saying?
I'm just saying, how is it different from anything we've ever seen?
Because I just said, point to me the other place where this has happened on any show, and I'm
willing
to...
That it was a eunuch? I mean, how is Daedra
That was the whole point about why that scene was meaningful in the context of the story.
He could have been a woman.
Whole point why Grey Worm was like very tentative. It's the whole reason why it played out the way it played out and why it was a big deal.
But you can have that important between anybody, like somebody who has like a disfigurement, Beauty and the Beast. I mean,
a regular disfigurement. This is not Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, it's a disfigurement where somebody doesn't have a male genitalia. So how is he different from like a woman? I mean, he could be just butch. I mean, I don't understand.
The whole point of the scene was that
I mean, love was love. It doesn't, you don't really need gender to have or genitalia to have it, a tender love scene. So I don't really understand why it was innovative.
Like saying love is love, a kiss is a kiss. Who cares if Kirk are kissing? Because
Like, why Kirk and Uhura was kissing? Because they were forced, so they were raped by an alien I'm not going to say raped because that's extreme, but I'm just saying they were forced. They didn't do it on their own. They weren't in love. It wasn't tender.
By that standard, this is more significant than the Kirk.
But I'm just saying, I've seen tenderness. I've seen love tenderness before.
This is not
because. Okay, but have you seen it on Game of Thrones before?
I'm not really seeing the difference. So what? They had a tender love scene.
I think it was significant for Game of Thrones, and I felt it was significant for television in general.
Okay.
I agree.
Well, I didn't care.
You don't have to care about it, but I think the proof is there. And I felt the significance, like, wow, this is something. This definitely makes this episode stand out.
Okay. You're entitled. Not convinced, but that's
good. Okay. I felt it was a big deal.
That's good. I'm glad you have your feelings. All right.
Just kidding. I'm so sorry.
What did you say? Because the audio went out on that.
No, I said, but why? why? Tell us more.
Don't. Let's not. Okay, so what else?
Let's talk about Winterfell.
Okay.
Because we got some drama going on at Winterfell. So in this episode, John basically, in the last two episodes, one, he's heard from Sam at the Citadel about the dragon glass on Dragonstone. And then all of a sudden, he hears from Tyrion, who is also on Dragonstone and is basically saying, hey, we want to. Oh, excuse me. You know, they're basically saying, hey, we want to join together. Come meet Daenerys. Let's talk about an alliance or something to that fact. And of course, you've got Jon, who pretty much knows Tyrion and is, you know, Tyrion is one of the few people that he actually knows and respects, you know, as far as anybody from Westeros, because he's so different from Jaime and Cersei. You've got Sansa, who also knows Tyrion's character, because when they were married, Tyrion treated her with nothing but respect. And then you've got Ser Davos, who doesn't know anything about Tyrion except for what he's heard. So you've got three people with three different viewpoints who are trying to figure out whether or not this is a trap or whether or not this is something that, you know, something that they should pursue. Of course, Jon is looking at things again from a standpoint of we need more people. We need more, you know, we need a bigger army. We need to unite, you know, the people in order to get Cersei off the throne. Sansa doesn't want to do it. Davos is kind of on the fence. So of course this is adding to the already, you know, tense situation between Sansa and Jon, because they are pretty much butting heads on everything at this point. You know, they can't agree on anything as far as how John's running things, what they should do. It's kind of causing some confusion.
She agreed on one thing.
Which was?
She got the throne while he was away.
right. But, you know, it took him to say, you know, it's like he wanted to do what he felt was best. And going by his judgment, again, for the most part, John has been a good judge of character. You know, he has not made very many mistakes when it comes to.
Oh, except for the one where he got killed.
No, but you know what? But he didn't trust most of them. But he was their leader. You get what I'm saying? It's different. it wasn't like him with the previous Lord Commander, or him with what was the guy's name? Delorious Ed, the one who, you know, helped him, or the one who took over as Lord Commander once John left, or with Pip, or with, you know, any of his other so quote unquote friends from the Night's Watch. It's like those were his brothers, but those were not the men he trusted. So, you know, he always made his feelings very clear about those he liked, you know, those he liked, those he didn't like. So his sense of judgment has not been off. You know, he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders.
Well, so my thing, Hanako, though, is he is always adamant about finding a way to defeat the White Walkers. Now, for a bunch of people who have never seen the White Walkers, they don't get it. They don't understand how, like, lives have been lost and how, I guess, Borg-like these people are. Like, once you get, or zombie or whatever, they don't understand the danger. I don't quite get why they aren't listening to him with the same intensity, or listening to him and responding to what he's saying. Because it's like, she wants to, Sansa is on a whole different level. I understand she needs to rule Winterfell and all that. She's thinking of ruling that portion of the land, but she's not thinking about, there's a bigger threat coming, and you can, you know, run the castle all you want to, but these guys that's coming to you, they're not gonna, that doesn't matter. Like, that nobody
only
understands.
There was a lady with red hair who could bridge this.
But she's not in Winterfell. No, she's not in Winterfell. Number one, she's not in Winterfell, and then how would she convince them if Jon Snow can't? I don't get your point.
I think the issue with all of that is, you know, Sansa is a true northerner. Like, she went south because she was going with her dad and because she was going to marry Joffrey or whatever. But she is a true northerner, just like the rest of their bannermen. These people, for the longest time, it's been pretty much Westeros and then the north. Like, the north never meddles in the south's business. So, whereas Jon is basically trying to unite everyone, he's trying to, as Eric says, build bridges. The North is basically like, that's their issue. Let them worry about that. We don't want anything to do with that. And I think that's just kind of where they're going. Like, John is trying to push for joining of forces. And I think the North is just pretty much like, yeah, we tried that before. We banded together for your brother. We rode down south. We were going to fight in a war. Your brother.
That's fine, but he's not talking about just the lands uniting. He's talking about this one particular enemy that, like, people in the Citadel don't believe exists, and then, like, people have actually seen. I don't understand.
That is weird. Winters have come and gone in this. Like, people have presumably lived through winters. One guy specifically says that winters end, or winters come to an end. So, why haven't more people heard of the White Walkers?
It's actually not that weird.
Heard of them, but the White Walkers have something about whatever it is that's going on. Maybe it's the fact that
winter. Why are they scared of winter? Because of the White Walkers? Why don't more people know about this?
That's not why
they're scared of winter. They're scared of winter because their winters literally last years.
But yeah, the White Walkers don't come.
They've never encountered a White Walker in those.
No one has in what, a thousand years?
In 1,000 years.
So they've had winters, many winters, but none with White Walkers. Not in 1,000. So many don't even know if that's just a legend. You know, that's just an old tale.
As far as they know, it's just legend.
But they literally had a freaking battle where people died, and
John is one of the few witnesses. Who's lived to tell about it?
I don't understand why his word isn't good enough for them. Why?
There's no reason why it should be good enough.
Think about it like this.
If they make him his king, then why won't they believe that?
Think about it like this. Think about it like this. If the president, I'm not talking about any specific president. Say the leader of our country, the leader of the nation, the leader of the world, whatever. You've lived in this bubble for so long, and all of a sudden, you know, they tell you, oh yeah, aliens are real. They walk among us. Are you just going to automatically believe it?
I completely agree 100% with Hanako right now.
I'm inclined to believe that if my world didn't have magic in it and my world didn't already have things that I saw every day, which were freaking weird.
But the thing is, you have to remember the majority of these people don't witness that magic.
Yes.
It's all just rumor. It's all just a fantasy. It's all just legend to them. John Snow,
they just saw dragons come and eat people.
Like, not all of them. Again, you're talking about the people in the north.
Understand, there's no internet in Westeros.
Don't know about any of this stuff.
No cameras.
Yeah.
No. They have ravens. That's all they have. What's the bit rate on a raven? Someone.
You got to think about it. The first time most of these people have heard.
Forever. Between messages, like, they can get the word out that dragons actually exist, folks, and whoa, maybe White Walkers do too.
But
again,
to
use Monaco's,
how do you know that it's true, and how do you know that it's not a scare tactic?
Yes, because
you don't know. Yes, Jon Snow has seen it and he's telling them, but again, if one person is telling, if I'm telling you that Pennywise is standing in front of me right now, nobody else is around to witness I'm just
why are you
using
talking
an
about
example.
Why are you bringing clowns into this? Why don't I even understand what's happening right now?
Because
you're
I'm talking about something that to our rational mind cannot exist. No matter what someone tells us, if somebody tells me that right now
so
that White
then,
Walkers
so
exist
then.
In this world.
Okay, that's fine.
You know? So
there has to
people,
be a White Walker that's loose. Somebody can put one in a cage and bring one. They're like zombies, right? So you could just like put one in a cage and bring them as evidence. Why hasn't anybody done
have
that?
Have you not paid attention to any of the episodes with the White Walkers in the past?
Maybe not. Is that wrong? I'm just thinking, right? You could put them in a cage, right? Are they fast? They're fast. Ones.
They're fast and they're strong. And of course, they are magical.
And they're impervious to almost everything except dragon glass
and
concentrated fire.
Well, you make a dragon glass cage.
But again, you're missing the whole point. Dragon glass is so rare. This is one of the reasons why they are. This is one of the reasons why John is pushing for them to do what they need to do. They need to go. He keeps saying it. We need to find the dragon glass. We need to mine it. We need to create weapons from it. It's the only thing that will save us, and nobody is listening to him.
So then do you think that maybe he would just like, okay, you know what? You MFs don't want to listen. I'm just going to let the White Walkers come roll up on you.
No, because what kind of leader would he be? He'd be no better than Cersei.
Well, she wouldn't get.
And
the
by the way, again, Melisandre is on John's side in this what we're talking about, which is again why I feel like she's important because she's one of the few people who gets it.
We get it, Eric.
Like John gets it. I'm just saying, come on, they're like the only people who are getting it, and you guys are just saying everyone else. Give them
no,
some
she's
credit.
For me right now. She doesn't have anything to do with the White Walkers unless she can
she's
produce
only been
one.
In one scene, Cass.
Unless she can produce a White Walker episodes. And convince everybody that White Walkers are coming. To me right now, she's annoying me.
He's one of the only allies that John has in his quest of unification right now.
All right, dude. That's fine.
I guess he could have no allies and we could start the story from there.
Not me, he has plenty of allies. She's
no,
not
but no
only.
One's on this page. She's the only other person besides him.
Maybe.
And
I still don't believe. I think she's trying to sell some snake oil.
Okay.
Honestly. Whatever. So, okay. John is going to meet Danny. Danny said something that really irritated me because she has never, you have to remind me, she said that if Jon Snow comes to visit her, that he has to bend the knee. Now, has she ever required anybody else to do this? And why is she requiring him to do it? And why with such attitude?
Because
because he's Ned Stark's bastard. And you got to think about it. Ned Stark was instrumental in the defeat of her father and her brother. So there is that bitterness. Second, Ned Stark was the Hand of the King when Robert was on the throne, and Robert sent out the orders for her to be killed. That generally would have come from the Hand of the King, although she doesn't know that Ned was against it. So all she knows is this is the bastard son of one of my enemies. That's all she knows. And he wants to call himself king.
And not only that, but Dany has every intention, as we all know, to be the super duper king of Westeros. And part of that is getting all the other, you know, people ruling parts of Westeros to bend the knee. That's just how it works. So Dany, based on her character and how she behaves and what her goals are and what she believes, that's the only way it can go, is that if I'm going to talk to this guy, he has to bend the knee.
Then why is she not bending the knee? Why does she think she has more power than he does? Like what?
Because technically, speaking, she would be the heir to the throne.
There's because that.
Her father. Plus,
yeah, she technically has the
lineage.
Birth. Yeah, the lineage and the right. But not only that, everything about Dany's story from season one to now. Everything about her character, everything about her motivation, it has always been focused on this one goal. So she is staying true to herself. It's all she's ever believed. And the things that she accomplished in the previous seasons out east has only lent to her believing that she is, you know, that chosen one or whatever you want to call it. Because look at she's fireproof. She has the dragons, you know, all the things she did in Marine. So all the things that she's overcome, she brought the first Dothraki force that's ever crossed the Narrow Sea. I think she thinks she has like the prophecy very much in her favor. And as Hanako, who is this Jon Snow? As Hanako said, you know, this bastard son of my former enemy, who gives a shit? Like, who are those people in the North?
And so you also have to think about it from this point of view. Daenerys's whole goal right now is to conquer the Seven Kingdoms, is to be the queen. She doesn't even know about the White Walker threat. And she probably didn't know until Melisandre got there. Yes. I'm sure Melisandre will get her up to speed. But what she's going to realize when Jon comes to meet her is pretty much, Jon is like, I don't want to be king. I don't want to rule. All I want to do is defeat these White Walkers so that everyone can live. He said as much in this episode. See, right now, they're still on two separate pages because he doesn't care about being king. All she wants to do is be queen. She doesn't know about anything else. Because you got to think about it. Daenerys has not been in Westeros since she was a baby.
Okay. So that's fine.
Yeah. So fine. It's like at this point, she's saying he needs to bend the knee because she's looking at him as a challenger to her throne when that is the furthest thing from his mind. But of course, she doesn't know him. She doesn't know what his motivations are. So she's just acting on instinct. Now, once they meet, that's going to be a whole different conversation.
Hmm. Okay. What else? Any other minor things before the last major thing? Well, not minor, but what else we got going on in this
episode? Well, the only thing we had besides is Arya.
Arya. Okay.
Well, because Arya was focused on going to King's Landing to, you know, complete her list. And then along the way, after meeting Hot Pie, she runs into her old direwolf. And that's kind of a big deal. In the book world, that's something people...
It was awesome.
It was. It was awesome and sad.
And sad.
Yeah. It's something people have been speculating about forever in book reading about, you know, when is this ever going to happen, if it will, yada, yada, yada. So this, yeah, big scene happens.
Oh, okay. I have questions about that.
Okay.
So, okay, she's running around, having her life, blah de blah. All of a sudden, she's hanging out with a horse, doing a thing. And then she gets surrounded by a pack of wolves, like she's Liam Neeson in The Great. Okay, whatever. So, what? And then she comes up on, she recognizes her dire wolf. She's like, oh, let's talk. Dire wolf is, you know, whatever. Maybe recognizes her, then walks away. And then she says, that's not her. So, what now?
It's kind of a reference
to season one.
Season one. When Arya was when they were in Westeros and Ned and Arya was sitting down talking, you remember he had a conversation with her about how she's going to grow up and be a lady of a great house, blah, 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 blah. And she said, no, that's not me. Basically saying, I'm not going to conform to, you know, what everybody else wants for me. I'm going to be me. Basically what it is now with Nymeria has been out in the wild now for years. She's no longer a domesticated wolf. So even though she recognized Arya, for her to just stop being with her pack, because that was clearly her pack, you know, she was the biggest, and they basically waited to see what she was going to do before they reacted. So this is her pack. She's the leader of this pack. And for her to all of a sudden leave and go back to Winterfell with Arya, she would be abandoning who she truly is. And so it was kind of like, even though Arya had that heartbreak about Nymeria not going with her, she realized, okay, this is who she is. This is who she needs to be. So
never mind.
It was basically an echo of who she was way back when.
Wow.
100% correct.
Stephanie, did you get that? She is on mute. Okay. all right. Well, I mean, I knew I felt something like that, but I didn't really, I mean, hello?
Oh, hey, there you are.
Oh, okay. So did you get the whole wolf thing?
I missed the explanation. I couldn't hear you guys.
Okay, that's fine.
All right.
that's fine.
The wolf thing touched me. I haven't read the books. It was touching to see the wolf again. It was sad to know that, you know, they've just become completely different individuals.
And but you know what? I don't think that's the last we've seen of Nymeria. I don't.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Especially because she knows where Arya is going. I think it's one of those things where she's still out in the wild and she's being a wolf, but I think if there ever comes a time when Arya needs her in Winterfell, she'll be there.
Oh yeah.
So is Arya going back to Winterfell? Because I wasn't really clear.
Yes. Yeah, it's very clear, Kat.
She tells
because she was like going in one direction and then she went the other direction. I was
As soon as Hot Pie told her that her brother John was still alive and that he was king, boom. That was every change. And then she told the wolf, I'm going north now. I'm going to Winterfell. And she was
And then also that group of guys that was at the inn with her, when she came out to her horse, they were getting into their cart and they were saying onward to Westeros. So that was the direction towards Westeros. That's why she looked at them and she looked back and she looked at them again and then she turned her horse around to go back.
Right.
Yeah, she meant King's Landing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you said that I just got him. I don't know. I was tired and I was like, okay, what now? Because I thought maybe she was doing like, I can't go home until I finish my list. And I was just like, now where did she go now? What now? And so I kind of turned myself around. I got turned around in there.
I think at this point, if she has any hope of reconciliation with any of her family, I think that's going to be priority for her now because, you know, with her mom and with Rob, she was so close. Like, she was literally outside the door the moment they got killed. So, I think at this point...
But not only that, but growing up, John and Arya were the closest to each other. I mean, among their siblings. So,
yeah.
It's a big deal.
Okay.
So, But I don't know. That's going to be one hell of a family reunion and alliance, because you've got, like I said, you've got John, the military man. You've got Sansa, who is starting to be the thinker of the group, as you know, and she's the one who's kind of no holds barred. And then you've got Arya, who is slicing and dicing and cooking up meat pies of people. So it's going to be interesting having those three together.
Are we not including Theon, even though he was raised with them? And Bran or whatever?
No.
Yeah, we're not including.
Not counting Theon. But
we're
Bran,
not
Bran,
counting.
Bran counts, but not Theon.
Bran counts, but I don't. Unless they make their way to Castle Black to collect him, I don't know where he fits in this, because he's not. One,
oh,
he's not mobile.
He's not, and he's magical. He's not important. He don't have a role to play.
No. I'm saying as far as with them in their immediate mission, because he is, you know, I guess in a way, he's kind of above them now as far as.
Yeah, he's kind of like season 7, part 2.
Yeah, he's kind of like, you know. He's the three-eyed raven now, so he's basically a seer, or a, you know, whatever you want to call it, an oracle, if you will, for all of Westeros. Now, I do want him to meet up with them.
He can affect time. Like, if he can affect the past, I think that's a pretty powerful thing.
Do you think he affected or he just saw it?
Well,
No, he did something. It's implied that he affected time.
What did he do? Did he change something?
What? Yes, what, because he remember, he called out to his father when Ned was going up to the tower, and Ned heard him.
Yeah.
And then something about his going into the visions affected the whole Hodor thing.
Yeah.
I thought he didn't affect it, but I thought it was the way that it was always meant to be. And so he didn't change anything. He just did his part in that particular time.
Well, then how did Hodor get the name Hodor?
Hodor got the name Hodor because he went back in time at the time he was supposed to and whispered Hodor in his...
I think that counts as something.
Okay, yeah, no. I had to think of that, geez.
But, you know, I do want to see that whole reunion, because now, you know, Bran is the three-eyed raven, so he knows everything. I really want him to put that bug in Sansa's ear that Littlefinger was responsible for Ned's death. And I just want to see that play out. I just want to see that play out.
You know she don't kill him. I can't wait till she kills him. I don't like
really
it.
It's
so smarmy.
Sansa to kill Littlefinger. I mean, Jon could have done it this episode, and he was very close to it. First of all, what kind of creeper are you to tell a man that you love
his sister
just like you loved his mother, and then you were also married to the aunt? What in the world is wrong
with
this
man? Yeah, that's something not right.
Buy the man a drink.
No,
what,
no.
Eric?
We're
going to kick you off the podcast.
I mean, John could have just squeezed a little bit harder. And
no, he could have, but that... That would not have but as you say, that robs you of satisfying conclusion.
But it would have been nice.
Gratification.
But then, like, what is he for now? You know what I mean? Like, what is he just hanging out for? Why don't
like he just
because
said,
he controls the Knights of the Vale.
Yes, and like you said, if it wasn't for me, you would be all dead right now.
Okay,
so.
But so they already did their thing. Why aren't they like, okay, you're the Knights of the Vale. You need to pledge your allegiance and to me, Sansa, and then. The other guy's dead, and then boom, it's done. Like, why do they still, like, what does Littlefinger have? How are they loyal to him via the coin? Or, I mean, I know they don't like him because he's an honorable person. That's not it.
No, because he's Robin Aaron's legal guardian.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Remember
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
This is why they lay all the groundwork, you know, for 6 years so that...
Yeah, I forget that shit season to season, and y'all have to remind me.
Yeah,
that's why I have
he's Robin Aaron's guardian, so he basically controls the, you know, he can...
I mean, because it would literally be a crazy show, Kat, if all these characters were here for no reason, like...
Well, can they go to court and change guardians, and then we can kill Littlefinger?
Who's gonna be guardian of that crazy? Well, I won't even say crazy boy, spoiled, whatever you want to call him.
What is he doing now? How are they guarding him now?
Who knows? Mm-hmm. I know he's got. I know he's got his little, his own small council with him. That's the guy who Littlefinger threatened last season, but. Mm.
I need to take him to
court. You know, I'm so sick of Littlefinger. I'm so.
And that name is terrible.
Of his character.
That's the whole point. That's why he has that name, because it's a terrible name.
For a terrible person.
All right.
That's why they use that. He doesn't like that name. That they've used it to mock him since he was young.
It's something wrong with his name. I forget.
Well, no, because the area that he comes from was called the Fingers. That was like the nickname of the area he grew up in, and then of course he was, like he said, he was the littlest thing there, so that was just one of those names,
like Finger Lakes.
It's funny, like Peter Pettigrew. It's just like that.
But yeah, I either want Sansa to kill him. Or I want one of Daenerys' dragons to have just a Littlefinger barbecue. That would be so great.
Yeah.
That would be so great.
I like it. Okay, yeah. So are we ready to talk about the thing? The end of the second episode?
Yes.
Y'all ready? I need to hear everybody say yes.
Take it away. Yes.
Eric? Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, so let me tell you guys what's going on here. I'm up here like barely, you know, because I'll pay attention to Game of Thrones. But you know, y'all, you guys are my crutch. I lean on you. I'm like, what? Okay, I'll just ask Hanako and chill. You know what I mean? So I watch and you know, I'm pretty laid back. I'm always in bed laying down. Well, all of a sudden, shit just escalated, and I was just like, whoa, I didn't expect any of this. I was like, how did this get so intense all of a sudden? And there was, because there's been talking, I feel like, for 6 years, with maybe a fight here or there, but then I was reminded by someone that the second episodes are always off the chain, but I had forgotten, of course. And then all of a sudden, like, there's a ship. There's fire, there's fucking punching, there's like, and like chips are on fire. Now somebody got stabbed in the nuts and kept fighting, and I'm just like, what in the world is happening? And it just like got crazy, like the snakes are gone, and I just, let's try to unpack what happened here.
I can tell you what happened in one word. Euron. We knew he was crazy. We just didn't know he was this kind of crazy. I mean,
how do you get stabbed in the nuts and keep going? Did I imagine that?
No, that wasn't him. That was another fighter.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, fighter. Either he got stabbed in the nuts or he got stabbed in the thigh where you have that major artery. And I was like, somebody's dead. And it looked like it was him who got stabbed, like one of the sand snakes had stabbed. And I was like, you know, that's one tough bastard if you get stabbed in the nuts and keep fighting. Because I thought...
No, there were a there were a couple of other guys that looked like him, because I thought that too, because I really thought the sand snakes were going to win this fight. I was like,
really?
Oh, yes, okay.
The three of those chicks.
Well, no, because this is why. Because apparently in the books, the sand snakes are a big deal. And like when they first brought them on the scene in season, what was that, season 5, I think it was, you know, there was so much hype around them, so much people, you know, so many people were talking, oh, they're bringing the sand snakes, it's about to go down. And then like season 5, we really didn't see much from them. Season 6, we really didn't see much from them, except for, you know, them killing their cousin and just, you know, a couple of things here and there. But it was never like this fierce. You know, I just wasn't as impressed as I felt I should be, given what the reputation of these characters are in the books. So, when this scene starts going down, they're fighting, and you know, they're getting some good licks in, and they're doing this and they're doing that. Like you said, they're stabbing men in the nuts, and then they're cutting. I'm like, oh, so we're about to see what these chicks are about. And then all of a sudden, it just takes a turn for the worse. First, they kill off the main chick, the oldest chick. I cannot think of
what her
character's name is. Keisha Castle Hughes' character. And I'm like, wait, what? Obara, that's her name. I was like, wait, she's dead? She can't be dead. And then, of course, he stabs her, and I was like, oh, this doesn't look good. And then, of course, here they go with the second one, and he chokes her to death. I'm like, really? Is this all we're going to get out of the Sand Snakes? And then, of course, the youngest is downstairs with Ilaria, and they take her and her mother alive because I'm, you know, of course, by now we figured out this is the gift that Euron told Cersei he was going to bring her. But I looked at that scene, and I was like, I was so impressed because the fact that Euron just snuck up on them the way that he did and the way he came out the sky and onto, I mean, everything about him was like Pirates of the Caribbean on steroids. I loved it. But at the same time, I was just like, these people have no chance in hell. Like as he said when he was speaking to Cersei, he's the ruler of the 14 seas for a reason. This man is a beast.
Stephanie,
like,
what did
is one of those people that backs up what he says. And it was impressive to watch.
I thought it was really fun to watch. I agree with Hanako 100%. Everything that she just said, I was like nodding my head yes, high-fiving my dog yes.
That's it. No other responses other than.
Okay. I mean, it was powerful and it really moved the story along. And I was like, yes, I'm interested in you. Yes, 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 yes. And, you know.
Okay. Eric, give me some. Give me some, Eric.
I didn't dislike it.
Oh, shit.
I didn't dislike it. But I just think it's interesting because it's,
what was it Jon Snow said in that episode? Father said everything before but is bullshit.
Because I just think it's ironic. I mean, obviously, Kat said, you know, this is like what pulled her in. This is like the most interesting part of the episode for her. This was like, I'm not saying because of entertainment value, but just its place in the story. It was the least interesting part to me in this episode. Not saying it was bad. Not saying I didn't enjoy watching it. Just
why?
The part.
Because it's Eric, man. That's how he rolls.
No, because again, this was like the most predictable thing that happened in the episode. I mean, this circumstance.
I didn't expect this to happen. I just expected more.
I didn't expect him to come out of nowhere. No, I did not expect that.
But you're saying the results were expected.
No, but I'm saying because every season they have to do something. You can't just have the quote-unquote good characters win, 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 win. They have to take some losses. People have to die. So,
I mean, I know that, but I didn't expect a big firestorm and, like, ship ladder thingies going across and, like,
this is, okay.
Especially not this early in the season.
Yes.
Well, I know, right? Eric.
I'm not surprised by that, but no. I was surprised by the part of him coming out of nowhere and this assault in the middle of the night. Yeah, that took me by surprise, but then that's also what I didn't like, because, as stated,
like fun.
He does not like fun.
I already told you guys, I didn't say I just liked it, I didn't recognize the entertainment value. It's just, in the plot, it felt like, oh, of course, it only makes sense.
This is your Doyle, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because I was just like, why else is Yara ferrying what's her nose back to Dorne, as stated in, you know, in the earlier scene? Of course, to facilitate this.
Because they were going to have sex.
No. They needed a whole ship to do that on. Yeah, but no, that's not what he's talking about.
I'm giving him a hard time.
I know. But
and so yeah. it's like something had to happen. You know, there had to be a setback for the good guys, so to speak.
Because Tyrion's plan was too perfect. Like, sure. His plan made much sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it made sense. Like, I just didn't expect it to happen. I don't know. It just caught me by surprise because I didn't realize all hell was going to break loose at the end of the thing.
That's the thing. See, I was surprised in the moment, yes, but the cost of that surprise is me scratching my head and going, oh, okay, I guess, because...
Eric, this is classic Eric.
The only way this could happen is if it was, like, an irrational surprise. Meaning, there's no... I mean, it makes Yara look so bad and so... I understand she was below decks, but it makes her crew and her people just seem worthless, that they just got stomped like that. And so the surprise is at the cost of Yara's character. I don't mean her getting kidnapped, but I mean at her character seeming like worth, like, you know.
Yeah, but they've been without a home. They've been without a home for so long.
No, I feel like
I don't think Yara was because if you think about it,
the plot.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with him, but I feel like they haven't had resources like they would usually, and I felt like they were off their game.
I don't even think it was that. I mean, if you think about it, all of Euron's ships, look at his ships. His ships are black from top to bottom. They were sailing it at night. So even as good as Yara and her...
I just saw the full moon in the background, but yeah, okay.
You're good. I didn't see it because
I just saw it because it's right in front of my face right now, and I was like, "Wow, that's interesting."
Because they should have been able to see some reflection or something.
Yeah, but
cloudy too because you got to think about it. There was lightning.
There was some smoke, but it looked like it was from the fire. But I don't, you know. But no, but yeah, I know. But I'm not trying to take away from your point, though. I was just
pointing. Yeah, no, I think it was cloudy because there was lightning in the sky. That's what they were looking up at when they realized that the sails were there. Because there was lightning going, they turned their head towards that, you know, movement, and that's when they started seeing the sails come in. But
and then there was yelling, and then fire, and then nut stabbing.
Yeah, I don't think that. To me, that doesn't paint Yara in a bad light. Saying that she's not good, I just think her uncle was better. You know,
yeah. But again,
he's been out on the seas, like in exile, conquering the seas for years.
But again, if we want to take the Watsonian approach,
here we go.
Here's Yara in her flagship, in the middle of her armada. One would presume maybe her flagship would be in the middle or protected by smaller ships, which is how navies usually roll. And somehow Greyjoy comes in with his own flagship, goes right to the middle of Yara's forces, gets right to her ship, you know, T-bones them. And then, I mean, maybe they just had the numbers in terms of Euron's crew. But Yara's ship was loaded with very capable fighters, including herself and the snakes and everything. And despite that, Euron still got the best of them. So, I mean, yeah, it's like, whoa. So maybe Yara is inept, or her armada's inept, or her people, or, you know, maybe Euron is just that much better. I don't know. But I'm just saying, look what happened. There's the evidence. That was like, you know, like blown away without question. One-sided fight, as far as we could tell. And not only he killed the snakes, got his hostages, you know,
they were
just like that.
In the cover of night,
and I got that, but night works both ways though too.
I guess I don't know. I don't think that Watsonian so much as Draconian. And maybe that's a little forced.
I felt bad for Theon. I did.
Yeah, PTSD.
PTSD is a bitch.
Was it PTSD or was he? Did he look around and see how crazy his uncle was and was like, you know what? I need to save my sister, so I gotta actually live. So I need to do something else besides
look at his reactions. Sure. Look at his reactions because
he looked around and saw his uncle was crazy as hell and wanted to fight another day.
Look at his face and the way he reacted and the shots that they gave. It wasn't just that people were being beaten. They specifically showed him looking at people being mutilated. And then you can see it in his face. His eye starts twitching.
Yeah, but wait. You're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. But why can't it be both, though?
I'm not saying it's not both, but what I'm saying is the fear, I think, is what was most prevalent first, because Theon, while he's been back with Yara, you know, basically Yara was trying to bring him out of that whole Reek persona. She was trying to build his confidence back up, build his strength back up. And I mean, we had just seen him in the scene before where she said, he's my protector. And up until Euron had Yara, Theon was holding his own. He was up on that deck kicking ass.
I think he still is. I think that, yes, true, in the moment, he might have looked like he was freaking out, but I think he also made a calculated decision that he could not take on Euron with a knife to his sister's neck, and that shit not go down in a bad way. This dude sliced through.
Absolutely.
I think it's both, though. Yeah. I think it's both together. I think he made the calculation, plus he was having a PTSD episode.
I agree.
Based on everything around him. And somehow, and he was able to fight through that and still make a rational decision at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. So now Daenerys is about to come after Euron. That's going to be fun to watch.
Who now?
Well, that's the other thing, too. Daenerys, she said. That's the other point, or why they have to have this scene, because there always has to be some sort of big bad on the horizon, and it was Bolton for the longest time, and now that he's gone, you know, Euron has to be that Bolton, the next person to take down. So it's like, all right, we have to make someone else seem just as formidable as Bolton did, in a way.
But you know, Euron. What were you gonna say, Steph?
I can't wait to see him die. That'd be fun. No.
But I wanted him to last a little bit longer because he is entertaining. But I feel he's going to go so quickly, you know.
Well, there are only so many episodes, period.
I know. That's why I was like, he's here. He's causing all this ruckus. But I'm like, dude, the show's by the end. What are you doing? Like, why are you even...
he is finally having his moment, though. From when was he introduced? Like season 4 or something?
I don't remember. No,
season 5.
Way back when he killed. Was that in season 5 when he killed?
Behan, that was. No, excuse me. That was season 6.
That was his first appearance. Yeah. The bridge thing. Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm just like, he's still pretty new.
Yeah.
We'll take show.
I don't think they're gonna kill him off quite yet.
Maybe
I don't think so. Because I hear he's supposed to be like a big part of this season. So I don't think I think he'll probably last through this season. Now he may not make it past season 8, episode 1, but I think he might be, you know, kind of sort of safe for now.
To me, though, he's a badass because, like, he came in, we had this thousand ships conversation before, but I read this article about how this guy knows how to build like medieval ships or whatever, and he said that there's no way that Euron could have built 1,000 ships in the time that he had because he didn't have the resources via trees or via expertise, and so he had to either already had ships, commandeer ships, steel ships, and then maybe have a few made, but there's no way he could have made them all from scratch because the Iron Islands or whatever don't have that many trees.
Wondered about that.
And so I thought that was a really good article, and I was just like, dang, why you think so hard? But I enjoyed the article.
Game of Thrones plays fast and loose all over the place with time in ways just like that. I mean, yeah, if you really get into the show, they break rules of space and time all the time, and without obvious on-screen magic, they do it.
Yeah, because some of these things you have to wonder about, like, how much time is going past in between these episodes. Like, Varys made it to Dorne, and then he's already back at Dragonstone, like, and the White Walkers are still marching towards the wall.
dragon disease or whatever.
There's hundreds of examples throughout the whole show of things that don't really make sense in that kind of way.
Yeah. I wondered how much time had passed, actually, because of the dragon scale illness that Jorah has. And it's like,
oh my God.
Oh, we forgot about that.
So why gross. Is Samwell Tarly getting all of the gross scenes this season?
I know.
It's like they picked straws and he lost. Because he had the chamber pots and everything in the first episode and the autopsy, and now in this one, he's sitting there. Did you guys see? Oh, God, it was so gross. It was so nasty.
I think Eric thought it was artistic.
Well, no. My favorite part of the episode, probably the one that gave me like the chuckle and the smile, was the transition from Jorah's...
I know!
That was great. To the pie.
Like, yeah.
That pie. Yes. Oh, we were all sitting here like, oh my God. My daughter looked at it. She was like, I hate them so much.
I know. I was just like, why are they playing with us?
I love that. Messing around. Whenever that's done effectively, like in any show or movie, I'm always a fan of those types of creative transitions. So
oh my God.
That was my favorite part.
Yeah,
that was disgusting.
I was just like, why are they? Yeah,
it was like, disgusting, but then it turned heavenly.
I'm not sure.
I love those types of old timey, like big meat pies. Oh my gosh, I love those so much. So
you better hope there's not a fray toe in the next one. You,
oh God.
I'm saying though, those types of pies, when you get like a real one, they are so delicious. And so to go from that like disgusting image to that just heavenly, like culinary confection.
You know what? I like the scene because, as my daughter said, you know, with Jorah and Sam, she said, this is the meeting of characters that we never knew we wanted.
That's true.
Sam was in there. He was trying to be serious, but he was still joking at the same time. And Jorah was looking at him like he didn't know what the hell to think of him. He was just like
you need some rum.
I'm going to die either way, so might as well try.
He was like, here, drink this rum. You're going to need a lot of it. And he took some for himself. That was right. Like, nice.
Right. So, yeah, but I did like the fact that Sam basically let him know, look, I served with your father. I was there with him when he died. I'm not going to let you die. It was like, oh, okay. Because at this point, you got to think about it. When he gave Sam his name earlier, and Sam was like, is there any family, that we need to contact? And he was like, I've been dead to them for years. So to see that someone actually cares whether he lives or dies, I think is nice. Because yep. Jorah has not had it very easy, you know?
Totally.
Yep. Totally agree.
So now, is he just peeling the skin off and going to put some sort of, like, herbs and perhaps spices on there to cure him?
Yeah, habanero peppers. He's putting habanero peppers.
There's supposed to be some kind of salve that this Grandmaster Pyre or something created to try to cure it. And, I guess that's what he's going to try. There's actually an article I saw online, and it basically... it showed close-ups of all of these scripts and writings in the episode. So we got to see, you know, the full text of Cersei's message to Jon. We got to see the full text of Tyrion's message to Jon. And then you got to see a little bit of the text that Sam was reading last week. And then also the text he was using, to try to cure the grayscale from this week. So there's some interesting tidbits in there. I don't know how these fans find the time to go through and pull
really,
some of the
Hanako,
tidbits that they
really?
No, seriously.
I know, right?
You don't
just
know
a
how.
Screen cap. No. That's it.
Let me tell you, they had to magnify this screen cap because one of the screen caps that they showed from last week, when Sam was looking through the book that he stole from the restricted section, that was talking about the dragon glass on the right hand side of the page. Apparently, on the left-hand side of the page, there was a small passage about how ingesting a small bit of ground dragon glass will cure dragon scale.
Take this all in. Hanako's wondering how fans have the time to do this while Hanako herself has the time to read all their research and bring all of this to light.
No, like, but what I'm saying I'm reading that part, but the fact is that someone even knew that there was something on that page, because if you're looking at the screen, like, you just, when they show it, you only see really what Sam has in front of him. So to think about, oh, I wonder what they got on this other page, and to find some kind of way to magnify that, I'm just amazed, because I would not have thought to do that.
Eric would have.
I'm thinking that the only important stuff is what's on the page in front of him. You know,
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit, Hanako. I don't think you're. I mean, you're saying this like a skeptic, yet you're the person who's obsessed with the Supreme film at the same time, so it's kind of confusing.
To take in, to read it.
These are your people, but
interesting.
No, I do not disagree at all.
But I like the fact that Sam is a nerd enough to say, okay, you know what? Let's see, what can I do today besides clean out, you know, chamber pots and stuff? Yes, how about this? I'm going to go read a book and try to cure dragon scale for the first time ever. You know, given that the person who wrote the cure couldn't even cure himself. So, well,
I mean, I also don't appreciate how much they've hammered home the idea that the guy he's apprenticing under, the guy from Harry Potter.
Slughorn, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I get it. Okay, he's going to dismiss everything Sam says or suggests, because he's wizened and old and knows everything better, and he's going to just twiddle his thumbs while the whole world ends. Slughorn. Like, all right, so.
Thought we were talking about yourself, but.
Oh, okay. Snap. I didn't see that coming. Wow. No, I thought you were going somewhere completely different.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, dear.
The time where. No, I agree with Eric here. I feel like it got a little tedious for me, too. That's it. Okay. Sorry, Eric.
I'm fine.
Jokes at
you. I'm going to bring up the super inane thing that's bothered me so far. As much as I've enjoyed the first two episodes of Season 7, probably more than I thought I would, because you guys probably don't remember, but I wasn't the biggest fan of season 6 as a whole. I know plenty of other people enjoyed it, but it was not my favorite season. 6 was. So I've kind of liked these first two stories. Both episodes have offered more than I expected to like. That being said, I have this, man, I wish, now this is the part of my brain I wish I could shut off while watching the show, which is, Game of Thrones has become, just like, I think this is every show that's ever done more than 4 or 5 seasons in the history of television, that I have become entirely distracted by, no matter what character it is, I have been entirely distracted by all the hair and grooming standards that every character, male and female. It's bought. I could smell the pomade in the Night Watch men's hair.
Oh, like, my God.
At least it's fantasy.
Okay, I need to go back. Well, see, that's a good. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what bothers me about the show Vikings, from what I've seen of it.
The amazing hipster hair on them.
Exactly. That's what bothers me about that show, is because I'm like, it's more akin to, like, Hercules. I mean, the series Hercules, or because it could not exist in our world. Vikings exists in some different, like, alternate world, Earth. Well, Game of Thrones, I mean, I guess I need to go back to watch season 1 again. But I'm pretty sure all the characters in general look more realistic as far in terms of their hair being scruffy or their beards. Every single character, even non-essential, non-speaking characters, have like the most perfectly trimmed mustaches, beards, Fate. I just saw Littlefinger's
facial hair is over.
Daenerys' hair extensions, like everything is like the curl. It's out of control. Sam looks like he just stepped out of the shower.
It bugs me. Yet Samwell gets a bowl haircut for no reason. Poor guy.
John and I know he's had a man bun for a while. It's not new.
I was going to say, if you haven't noticed, I think most of the maesters have the bowl cuts.
But the problem isn't the bowl cut. The problem is the perfection of everyone's hair throughout all of season 7. I've been looking at every character. Even I'm looking at this guy in Winterfell, this balding lord, but he still has like this his little strands of hair they're perfect. Like, even has like frosted tips, you know, just
oh my god.
You think I'm joking? I'm not joking. It's ridiculous. Oh my god. The only person who gets away is like Grey Worm because he has no hair. Like, he's like the only person who is maybe realistic.
I'm so in the hair department. Putting it on a fashion note when I have to go. It was amazing talking to you guys. I gotta get going.
Okay. See ya, Stephanie.
Thank you guys so much. Love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Oh my god!
No, but I'm being honest. This has bumped me. But I guess it's every show ever, because I think every show like you see that progression of where the makeup and everything just gets too perfect by the end. Whether it's Lost, BSG, doesn't matter. It's like every show.
Walking Dead.
Next That's Generation. Funny. Walking Dead. Mm. Yes. Crazy. Anyway, but
that's crazy. That's funny. That's a real good note to end it on. I think we're gonna wrap it up. Any final thoughts? Any final speculations? Not anything that you've read in the books or any spoilers or anything like that. But
I've not written this in the books.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, you know, anything that you see coming up or you want to see coming up or you predict outside of what we've already said.
I'm just really looking forward to Daenerys and Jon finally meeting. That's all I care about right now.
It's cool.
Yeah, hopefully that's next week. Well, I know it's final thoughts, but I just have a question.
Oh, okay, no problem.
Minor thing to point out, maybe Hanako noticed it or has any insight, but you know Hanako, how the maesters, they all wear chains?
Yes.
And like if you read the books, and I don't know if they've talked about it on the show, but like each chain is supposed to represent like a qualification or something, like Boy Scout patches or badges.
Yes, Maester right. Aemon said something about that a few seasons ago.
Okay, all right, so that's like an established thing that we've seen throughout the show. And then I just thought it was curious, during the scene in Winterfell with Jon and Sansa has this chain that she's wearing around her neck. Mm-hmm. It looks like a Maester chain, but I'm not really sure. Is that supposed to represent something like a maester chain, or is it just a decorative ornament, but it looks so much like a maester chain? And I just thought, maybe did I miss something, or did Sansa do something? I don't know. It just seemed weird to me.
It is a, it's a decorative chain, but from what I understand, it may have some significance behind it. There was another article on EW.com, I think it was, that talks about the chain and what the what the meaning is of it for her, but I don't quite remember, so I don't want to say the wrong thing. But it is another item in which she seems to be mimicking Cersei, because apparently Cersei wore something similar.
Okay.
All right. As far as jewelry back in season 1, so
all right, that makes sense. And I know they pointed out in the first episode how Sansa copied Cersei's hairstyle.
Yeah.
Sansa in season 6 wore an outfit that was similar to one of Cersei's. I mean, yeah. So, all right. Well, I'm satisfied. It just looks interesting because it looks like a maester chain. But all right.
Yeah, actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's a small spike at the end.
I'll have to look for that. I just thought it was interesting because we've never seen or heard of a female maester that I'm aware of. But
No, yeah. It doesn't have anything to do with that. No.
All right. Well, there you go.
But it does have some other significance.
All right, guys. That is our show. We'd love your feedback. Give us a call, 773-336-2686. Go to our website at scifipartyline.com. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus if you want to still use that. iTunes reviews, we want that. And thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye. We'll be right back.
of line.